for ya.
KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local, present the On Air Chat. Now, here are your hosts, Steve Souter and Aaron Harter.
Good morning. Welcome to the On Air Chat. Steve Souter, Aaron Harter hosting. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction 342-5001. And CB Financial, Craig Barnwell, feels the income is the outcome that matters. Call 620-208-6777 for a free consultation. Good morning, Steve.
Aaron, how are we doing today?
Doing fine. About 40 degrees colder than yesterday, but doing fine.
Well, a little bit of wind, but it's been interesting.
Kansas, spring.
We better get to our program. We got a couple of guests that are big enough they could make life miserable for us.
Well, we got lots of topics we can cover, not just the main one.
There you go. Kent Schnackenberg needs no introduction, but good morning, Kent.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
And Mike Laporto needs a little more introduction. So
he's got a new title.
Yeah, defensive coordinator without Co on it anymore.
Appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Kent, I was looking on your website about Team Snack, and according to that, this all got started in 2015, and then that was the bike racing, and then you went at 2015 or 16, you formalized the whole thing?
Well, actually, 2014 is when I did the Dirty Kansas with Mark, and 2015 is when I started basically the Team Snack and the travel and things like that. So it's been several years now, 7-8 years.
Does it seem longer than that?
It's gone fast, like everything in life when you enjoy it. And so, I look back to it and it's hard to, believe all the different places we've been and all the things we've done. But just every day's a new day and excited every day to get up and try to help more kids.
That was my point. It seems a lot longer. Natalie is a key part of this. Did she sign on from day one?
Yeah. I mean, from the time I got back from that Tucson ride in 2015 and told her that I'd committed to do all 7 rides and travel all over the United States next year, her first words were, "It doesn't surprise me." And she's been there the whole time, and she's, without her, none of this would have happened, that's for sure.
So if she wants to be with you, she better grab her bicycle and join.
Well, I'm not saying she always wants to be with me, but, like traveling with me and stuff, a lot of times, some of the rides I've gone to by myself, a lot of times she'll go to some of the shorter distances, or once or twice a year she'll fly to a ride and be with me. So, and then a lot of times when I'm doing the assemblies around Kansas and stuff, I'm tying that in with my job and stuff. But she's a great person, and she's very caring, and she loves these kids too, and she wants to be a part of it.
So how old are you?
I'm only 67.
Well, that sounds only to me. How long are you going to do this? As long as you can?
I would like to continue to do this as long as I'm physically able to do it, and may not be as much the coming years, but definitely still try to help as many kids in this area and around the state of Kansas for sure.
COVID was a challenge.
COVID was really bad. It's bad for everybody, but so many of the school assemblies that we had scheduled in the diabetic camp that we send kids to were, of course, canceled. So that's one of the reasons it's so busy right now, because we're trying to catch up on all the assemblies. This year we are going to send 25 kids to camp again on full ride scholarships, thanks to a lot of generous people in this area. And it's busy, but it's not too busy.
A good busy.
Yeah. I mean, these kids deal with it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So for what I'm doing, it's nothing compared to what they have to go through.
I was going to ask you how kids handled COVID individually, but I think maybe Mike answer that. Is Mike Laporto is with us, and he and his wife Kim have a 7-year-old daughter. And I guess it must have been 5.5 years ago, or pretty close to that, you were here and we talked about her being diagnosed.
Yep, it was. She was 18 months old, so she's 7. She'll be here in August, so it's right coming up 5.5, 6 years ago. And shoot, going to your COVID conversation, that was challenging for sure. There's a lot of what ifs, and everyone didn't really know what the disease was going, or the COVID was going to do to a general, regular, healthy, everyday person, let alone a diabetic. That was a high risk, and so there was challenges there. Knock on wood, she made it through very, very successfully. And to this day, she's been able to stay healthy and stay through it. But a lot of, unfortunately, keeping her in a bubble and keeping her kind of isolated at times, which is never easy for a young kid. But she's done really well with it and continue to thrive and be successful. And she's in first grade now and doing really well.
Kent, why don't you help us navigate through this and ask Mike some questions about what they've – challenges that they've had?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's very important is for Mike to talk about, you know, when she was diagnosed and what they went through that time, because one of the biggest things we try to do is spread awareness about the disease. And just as I told these kids the other day at a school assembly, I'm 67 years old now, and people still don't really talk about the disease. There's no things on TV about the disease. It's just been something I grew up with and nobody talked about in schools, and that's one of the reasons I want to go to all these schools and help educate the people about how serious it is and how it can affect anybody. And I'm sure before, you know, your daughter was diagnosed, you never thought about it, and you didn't have any idea that it could hit your family. So if you just want to kind of talk the people listening through that, that'd be great, I think, and very informative.
Yeah, you're right on. I didn't know much about the disease. I didn't know much how it affected young people. Didn't really know how it affected, you know, an older person. It was just kind of a heard about it. I didn't know much about it. We became very sick. When I say we, my daughter, it was Christmas time. It was right after Christmas. It was December 28th. And, you know, we came home. She, you know, was throwing up, having symptoms that to this day are now common. But when you look back, I honestly had no idea. But prior to the night that we kind of got punched in the gut, we were having, you know, peeing through diapers. We were having fruity breath. We were having different, you know, lethargic, different scenarios to where, you know, she just wasn't acting the same. But, you know, as a first-time parent, you know, she was our first kid. We just thought, oh, she's tired. She's young. She's growing. You know, who knows?
She'll be fine tomorrow.
Correct. Yeah. You know, she'll be okay. And, you know, the night we got sick, she threw up probably about four or five times in a couple-hour period. Couldn't keep anything down, was still urinating at a high rate. We just had no idea. We took her to the hospital or to the our pediatrician, and, you know, we were told a viral infection, you know. So it was one of them deals where initially all vital signs, all initial tests that you get at a doctor's office were clean, were normal. You know, we're sent home, and at that point, throughout the day, she became really lethargic, became laboring for breath, very lifeless, if you want to get to that point. And long story short, speeding it up, we ended up getting to the ER. She was so dehydrated, we couldn't get an IV. They ended up having to do what they call an IO, which is an IV directly into a bone. Still couldn't even get that to work. So at that point, we were diagnosed with ketoacidosis, which is the ultimate, not necessarily diabetes, but is the state you get put in once your blood sugar is at a certain level, which, again, had no idea. Luckily, we had a doctor from Children's Mercy kind of, you know, really save everything for us. Got on the phone with doctors here in town and were able to help navigate the times to say we're frantic, concerned, nervous, didn't know what to do because we were watching an 18-month-old struggle to the point where no one really could give us an answer or wanted to give us the answer because it wasn't a good conclusion at that moment. So got life-flighted, transported, if you will, to Kansas City, and, you know, luckily we were able to, you know, catch up. We were in the ICU or the NICU for almost 2 days before she kind of came back. I'll never forget the first time she's actually talking again. You know, she was an 18-month-old doing her typical learning how to talk and lifeless to nothing. The first time she came back, you know, we were able to talk to her about her dog, tell us where's your belly button. You know, those little things that you take for granted when they're little and you're teaching them and watching them grow that instantly went away because of her diabetic situation. And you know, me being with her for 5.5 years, it's my life. It's what I do. I coach football, there's no doubt. I love it. I love everything about it. But my kids know there that there's one thing that'll supersede that. It's diabetes. That's kind of who has made me today. 6 years ago, I'm a totally different person. Today, it's, you know, I want to advocate my guys that I coach directly. They understand it. They know the signs. They know the alerts that I have on my phone. They know, you know, who she is, why she is. And because what Kent does for my family, what he does for a lot of other families, it's invaluable. You know, and part of the little thing I can give back is to continue to educate and educate guys that I'm around, people that I know that want to know, people that don't necessarily want to know but don't have to go through what I went through. And
is there, Kent may need to answer this, but is there a diagnosis process, the symptoms, is it similar or is this pretty dramatic in the whole range of things?
Well, the problem is there's still not a lot of people that know the symptoms of this disease. And I think one other good example would be like Jeff Longbine here in Emporia, and when their daughter was, you know, misdiagnosed, basically they'd missed it for quite a while. She ended up getting life-flighted when she had, you know, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. She got life-flighted up to KU Med Center.
She was in college, right?
Or, yeah. No, I think she was a freshman and had been playing volleyball and stuff, so she'd been losing a lot of weight, drinking a lot of water, going to the bathroom a lot. She'd been kind of tired and lifeless, basically, at that day. And she finally went to her mom, and they got to the hospital, and somebody did a blood sugar test. And it's critical that people know the symptoms of this disease because it can get away from you. And I know I've told you before, I've been in some homes around the United States and one here in Emporia that they lost their kids because they were misdiagnosed or undiagnosed, and they never even got a chance to live with the disease.
A blood sugar test is not a normal lab test when you're taking your kid in, I assume. Yeah, they didn't take a blood sugar test until you got to Children's Mercy?
Correct. They do the typical vitals, your pulse, your blood pressure. I don't even know what else the typical one is now because it really doesn't matter to me. It's the blood sugar is kind of what my life revolves around. But we did not get a blood sugar until we really got onto the train or the truck to get to Kansas City. And that was, you're talking 16, 18 hours after initial signs of lethargy and all that. So,
without trying to throw anybody under the bus, it seems, I mean, from listening to this story, it seems like that'd be pretty obvious. Is there something hard about doing a blood sugar test?
I'm not in the medical field, and I know those people have a tremendous responsibility. They have to look for so many things, and this has just never really been talked about on a national level. They probably never had a lot of this talked about when they're going to medical school. I mean, doctors and nurses are the greatest people in the world, and they have a tremendously hard job to do. But I think if there'd be more of a national push for a blood sugar test to be part of, like, physicals when you go back to school or just any time you go to a pediatrician or to your doctor or something, I think that
annual
would help
labs
a lot.
And
yeah. And but that's not for me to say.
What's the age range, the typical for?
18 months. I mean, I've met families that are younger than that, up to 40s and 50s. A lot of adults, the statistics show there's about 200 people to 300 people a day that get type 1 diabetes, and half of them are kids and half of them are adults.
In the United States?
Yes. And of course, this is happening all over the world. I mean, there's 3 to 5 million people live with this disease, and that's another thing. That's a pretty small percentage of the population, and I think that's why you don't hear a lot about it. But for the families that live with it, it's about as serious as you can get. So it's every day. It's all day long. It's always on their mind. He's going to have his phone with him all the time. When I was up in Axtell, Kansas this week doing an assembly, a young lady that ended up getting up with me, because I always give the kids a chance to come up and talk with me at the assemblies, and she was just diagnosed 4 weeks earlier, and she just grabbed the mic and just told everybody about what had happened to her. And her mother has had type 1 diabetes for 29 years, and I've known her. She's been a customer of mine. She's a good friend. And this little girl said, we were driving back, and we were in the car all night long, and I was stopping. My dad told my dad and said, you're stopping so much to go to the bathroom. What's going on? And she said, my sister happened to be wearing a Team Snack shirt. that I'd given her the year before. And she said her sister was looking at the back of my shirt, and they were checking off all these symptoms. And her mom said, oh, my God, you have type 1 diabetes. And
but her mom was has
lived with the disease for a long time, but she was just asleep in the car. And so they're driving back, and that's how they came up with this. As soon as they got back, they went to the emergency room, and her blood sugar was 507.
Is it typically hereditary?
You know, another statistic I heard is that 80% of the people that get type 1 diabetes are the only one in their family. But I've met families that had 2 and 3 kids that also have type 1. So, yes, it can be, but it's not that typical, I guess.
So it doesn't play fair?
No, this disease does not play fair. It has a mind of its own, and every day is a new day.
Do you think part of the reason for it not being in a regular lab is just because once you do find it out, that the people can live with the disease? I mean, you obviously have a management plan, and we'll get into that. But do you think that's part of the quote unquote stigma around the disease? Is it is quote unquote curable once you find it out?
Well, I would never say it's curable because there is no cure for
right.
the disease. It is
livable.
You can manage it and you can live a normal life, but that normal life is going to involve a lot of ups and downs and a lot of really bad days and a lot of trips to the hospital possibly. So there's nothing about it that's simple. I just think that as I look back on this, when I was doing these bike rides for JDRF, there'd be all these people there that had obviously they live with type 1 diabetes, and that's why they're there to raise money. But even that organization on a national level has still never really gone out of its way, in my opinion, to talk about awareness enough. And that's one thing I keep pushing. And national organizations, I don't care if it's Cancer Society, whatever it is, their biggest thing is, and their job is to raise money. But along with raising money, I always thought it would be easier to raise awareness with it, because the more people that know about the disease, the more people that are going to donate money to you. I mean, just look how much money we've raised in just with Match Day. And a lot of it's just because I think we've gone, people know we're serious. Natalie and I are out there pushing and spreading awareness and helping these kids and sending these kids to camp. And the more people are aware of a situation, the more people are likely to help.
We need to get a break in. Kent Schnackenberg and Mike Laporto are our guests. We're talking about type 1 juvenile diabetes, right?
Yes.
Got that correct. Bruce Davis Construction and CB Financial make it all possible. You're listening to KVOE. We're live. And we are local.
Mondays. That's Bruff Sports Bar and Grill, 2640 West 18th.
Welcome back to On Air Chat. Steve and Aaron hosting, and Kent Schnackenberg and Mike Laporto. Mike is a defensive coordinator for the Emporia State football team. Right in the middle of spring ball, huh?
Yeah, right in the thick of it. About a little over halfway.
So when we interrupted you, you were telling the story. You had just been life flighted to Children's Mercy. So what happened from there?
So once we got there, you know, my wife and I showed up. So she, you know, our daughter went on the life flight up there, and we drove separate. You know, luckily the very first nurse that got in touch with our daughter and started working on her was able to find a midline, which is kind of an IV that goes between a joint. It's, you know, it's basically mid forearm and mid bicep type area usually. And at that point, once they got it in, she was able to get some fluids, which was the number one thing she needed at that time to kind of dilute her blood sugar at that moment. Her pH level was very, very severe. There's, you know, a big wide spectrum. I don't have to get into it, but she was so acidic that she was within probably, you know, we never got exact timing, but they said probably within a few hours of going into a diabetic coma, you know, at 18 months old. Unfortunately, now knowing what to do is just, you know, give her water, you know, give her insulin and kind of correct it. We didn't know that at the time. So, we were lucky to get that IV in. We stayed up there 4.5 days, you know, a little over two, about a day and a half, you know, in the ICU. Then got put in a general room. And to say I went through a crash course of diabetic care, it's an understatement. It took us 48 hours to even understand how to do this. And then they gave you a pink slip and said, good luck, go home. So I would say those 4 days in the hospital were very nerve-wracking, but we were under the care of doctors and nurses that, you know, kind of understood it. You know, the challenging part was when we got home. Me and my wife had to figure it out on the fly, you know, and knowing how easy, you know, learning the game of football and life and things like that to get thrown at you to take care of an 18-month-old that, you know, really couldn't communicate, really couldn't talk to you. You know, and at that moment, we had no, you know, technology to help us monitor. It was all finger sticks, which is a blood sugar test that we have at home.
Kind of tough for an 18-month-old, huh?
Yeah, without a doubt. That was challenging just to hold her down, and then you got to get her to eat, and then you got to poke her with a needle to try to get her insulin. Yeah,
whether you're hungry or not,
yes.
Whether you're thirsty or not, you need this.
Yes, and so it was a challenge. My wife, so, you know, for no other reason, not, you know, I understand it. You know, we lost daycare at that moment. You know, they were uncomfortable with taking her, which we understood. My wife had to stay home for almost 60 days. Which put her job on hold, you know, and I was still, you know, with the athletic department and helping them and trying to monitor. So it was a very traumatic time, you know, not only for the diabetic situation, but just trying to figure out our daily normal. But, you know, thankfully, you know, people like Kent, other people in this town that really rallied behind us, kind of helped us. You know, one guy that I'll shout out, he's, you know, my big boss, you know, Kent Weiser, had a daughter that was diabetic, and he helped us through it at the time. We had a lot of support, but, you know, day life turned in an instant. And we, you know, I had it easy. You know, my daughter's the one that had a heart. I didn't sleep, you know, hopefully she did, but, you know, I was okay with that, you know, trying to do whatever I could to help her at that moment.
How many times a day did you have to test her?
So we tested her, you know, in a 24-hour period, about 14 times on average. You're talking 3 times overnight because we never could go 2 hours without it, without knowing, because we didn't have a glucose monitor and he didn't tell us. We did it pre every meal, so right before every meal. We did it right after every meal, along with a needle stick, which is actually the insulin. So we administer the insulin through a needle. So we're poking a finger with some sort of needle, which is usually a finger.
While she's sleeping,
which that was a challenge.
I bet.
And then you would have to give her some sort of insulin through another needle, which is usually arm or, you know, kind of on her leg, you know, kind of a fatty area that's, you know, hopefully soft tissue.
So you're checking her every 2 hours, basically.
Yep.
And each time, dependent on the level, you're giving her insulin as well, or if it's good, you could skip an insulin shot?
Correct. So each situation was different. So every meal, you had to give an insulin shot to correct. So it's a carb-counting situation. So your insulin monitors or levels out any sort of carb intake. So every time she ate, she had to get it. But also every time we checked her, if her numbers were, you know, or an average range for an adult, you know, is, you know, 80 to 120, some say 70 to 120, right around there. Well, our goal was to keep her at 200, which is really high. But, you know, our goal was to kind of keep her at that level. And so anytime she was above 200, we'd have to administer a shot. Anytime she was below 80, 70, we'd have to wake her up or whatever the situation, give her food. So is that always that happy medium of trying to find level, normal? And, you know, that's the challenge of it, especially when, you know, technology today is different. We have the ability to monitor without finger sticking her every 2 hours. But at that moment, we didn't. So
how long did that go on?
We went without a glucose monitor almost 14, 16 months. It wasn't quite a year and a half.
So testing her every 2 hours for 16 months.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and then we, luckily enough, the one part we did receive pretty quickly was an insulin pump. So you administer insulin through shots, which some people elect to do that as they get older. They just don't want to carry around a pump, you know, for us. We elected to do a pump, which is it's not self-regulated. It's still, you know, a human has to insert numbers and input the data to be able to administer it. But it's a site that gets put onto her leg or arm, and the pump houses the insulin. So you don't have to stick her every time. It's a You know, it's a site that's on for 2 or 3 days, and you can administer through that site. So you don't have to stick.
But it's a needle that's into her leg.
Correct.
And then with an apparatus.
A pack of some sort.
Correct. I always tell her she's the one bringing fanny packs back. You know, she's the one sporting the fanny pack all the time.
So it's on, can put it on her back?
Yeah. Well, she wears it around like a belt. You know, she has a little fanny pack in the front. And
so the insulin pump, for when you see people that have it, it looks like what I would call an old little transistor radio, kind of that size. And so when I see her at school and stuff, she's got this fanny pack. And then on her arm or wherever they put it that day is a CGM, which is a continuous glucose monitor. And when I first started this, they looked kind of like a half of a boiled egg. They're that size. And now they're getting a lot smaller, and they're basically going to be the size of a button soon. And that's another reason that we've supported that, and I've supported JDRF, which they do raise a lot of money. And that money goes to research. That's what develops this technology. And now it's not as easy because her, you know, Kim and Mike are at work, and they always have their phones there because the alarms go off. And last summer, for the first time, I got to go to a diabetic young kids camp in Wichita and speak, and there's 22 kids that were all kindergarten or under that were type 1 diabetes kids from Wichita. And the whole time, it's just like, boom, alarms going off. I mean, all the time, something's going off. And they're just sitting there looking at me, listening to me, because they're just used to that. It becomes part of your life. But the technology is great, and it's going to continue to move forward.
And we're really lucky. A lot of people don't have the technology we have. You know, me and my wife both have great jobs, and, you know, insurance can always be hairy at times, but we are lucky to have what we do. And the monitor itself, which prevents us from having to do the finger sticks every couple hours, and it reads it every 5 minutes. It gives us an update, whether she's high, whether she's low. It gives us an actual reading, and it allows us to kind of keep it a little bit more normal. So we're lucky there.
And is the pump controlled remotely as well? Obviously, she's at school and she's wearing this. So if you get something that says she's 250 and you need to get it back down, I don't know if the levels are the same, but whatever the number is, if it's high and you need to get it back down, can you control how much insulin she gets at that moment as well?
So I can't physically do it. The pump has to be manually worked on, you know, on site, if you will. So luckily enough, you know, she goes to school here in town, and we were able to meet with the principal and the nurse and teachers. And, you know, one of the big things, and part of what Kent does, and I do it, you know, backwards, is, you know, we go educate staffs. We go educate school staffs, nurses, and a lot of them understand it, but they're the ones taking care of her, you know, from 8 a.m. until 3:30 when she gets out of school.
But we don't have nurses in every school, do we?
Correct. We don't.
So you got teachers or principals or somebody that gets...
And we're lucky. The school she does go to has a nurse that's there. I believe she's there 4 days a week, so she's there pretty often. But, yes, principal, her direct teacher, and then she has another helper, para-type person that helps within her room, and then principals and the other first – she's a first grader, so the other first grade teachers also kind of involved. So, you know, what we're able to do is reach 15-ish staff members at her school and educate them. And, you know, what we try to do is not only get them to educate, you know, for Kaylin, it's going forward for other kids. You know, that's what we want.
Are there other kids at her school that are type 1? Do you know?
I do not believe so. I know they've had some prior.
So some of the training wasn't as difficult as your training,
correct,
for instance.
Correct.
You said insurance has done a good job for you. Kent, what happens? You got people that don't have insurance.
It's a real tough thing. And our fund has helped, you know, some of the people in this area. The community foundation has been a blessing for us, and we've been able to raise it to $1,500 a year that people can get for us, you know, from us each year to help with expenses on some of this stuff. It definitely wouldn't cover everything. And then the Jones Trust Fund has helped us too, because they help some of the kids in this area. They've kind of partnered with us, if you will. But I've been around a lot of families where they can't afford the pumps, they can't afford the CGMs, and they try to go through the state somehow, and they try to do fundraisers, just different things. It's like anything in life; it's not fair. But if you have type 1 diabetes and you have a family that is struggling with work and stuff, it's very, very challenging.
How many? I guess you're not limited to the Emporia area. You're pretty much Northwest northeast Kansas, north central Kansas?
I mean, northeast Kansas is where I spend a lot of my time, but I've met, you know, we've met people all over the country and connect with people all over the world who still take, you know, stay in contact with us. And so many times during the week, I'll get a message from somebody around the country that their kid was just diagnosed or that they've heard about me. And we just send a T-shirt to them, and I send a personal note, just tell them we're going to fight for them every day and do what we can. So
I want to try to quantify. Let's just say Emporia School District. How many kids are you aware of with type 1 diabetes?
I could not tell you that, to be honest with you. I know that there's several kids. I know how many people take advantage of
a dozen
our phone.
Or?
I would be guessing, but I would think it'd be closer to 20. But that's just a guess that of kids that are in the entire district. I know just in northeast Kansas where I spent, like I said, a lot of the small schools up there. In those little towns I go to up there, there's 25 kids that live with type 1 diabetes in the school system right now.
Going back to insurance, and we don't need exact costs, but does insurance cover a GCM and or a pump?
So it yes and no.
Doesn't?
Yeah, it's a tough process. You know, it's one, you know, we're lucky enough to have the ability to get some of those costs deferred, if you will, but it's still very, very expensive. And if anyone has a situation where they don't have that backing, it is extremely tough. You know, and initial costs, you know, when we first got diagnosed, we had no idea. You know, you're talking insulin alone, not even pump, not even CGM. You're talking $200-$400 a month, depends on your usage. You know, and if you don't have anything helping with that cost, that can be a huge detriment. And so you add that onto your CGM, you add that onto your pump. Yeah, I mean, you got to have supplies, you got to have change, you got to have different things that get you there. And we have insurance, and it's still very, very expensive. I mean, there's nothing, no way around that for sure.
I mean, it's thousands and thousands of dollars a year.
And there's quite a few people that cannot afford that.
Yeah.
That are still poking every 2 hours and administering via a needle every.
And I do think there's some ways for people that, you know, struggle financially to get some help.
Sure.
But I wouldn't be a professional enough to say
sure.
that. But it's just definitely tough. It's with the people that, like with Mike and Kim, that have good insurance, is still a lot of money out of pocket every year.
Let me ask you a political question, Kent, and then we'll go to break because we've got to get another break in. Medicaid expansion, it would seem like that would be pretty important to these victims' families.
I kind of stay out of politics. It seems to work the best for me, but I do think that there are some things that could be done to help. I was watching the you know, the president's inaugural State of the Union, and I'm not even going to state my political party and whether I believe in whoever, but there was a young man that was featured that night that was a type 1 diabetic, and he is there to try to cap the price of insulin, which I think would be great for everybody. And I reached out to that young man's family. He's up in Maryland, and sent him a shirt and a note and got a hold of him and talked to him on the phone for a couple hours. He's pretty impressive. So, but as far as the politics of it, I just always want to help as many people as I can in any way I can.
Well, I can tell you that Senator Longbine and Mark Schreiber both support Medicaid expansion.
Well, I like those two, so I'll go ahead and say yes then.
But some of the other guys in the area do not. And if you want to affect this thing, you might lobby them. With that said, let's get a break in. This is the on-air chat. You're listening to KVOE. We're live and we are local.
Income is the outcome that matters most in retirement.
PlusAutobody.com.
Welcome back to the on-air chat. Steve Souter and Aaron Harder. We're joined by Kent Snackenberg and Mike Laporto. Mike's a defensive coordinator at Emporia State, and Kent, I guess you still have a job, but most people would say your job is type 1 juvenile diabetes.
Well, no, I'm very blessed that after we sold Navarette, that Richard and Monica Duncan have continued to let me stay part-time, which part-time is quite a few hours for me just because I love Navarette. I love the job, and I've tied it in with my travels to meet a lot of the kids and do a lot of school assemblies up in northeast Kansas. So it's been a great two things to try to work together on.
And your customers, I'll speak firsthand, your customers love you as well.
Well, I love my customers, and the type 1 diabetes thing has actually increased sales at some places because it affects some of their kids or grandkids, and everybody kind of knows me up in Northeast Kansas after 47 years going up there, and it's just crazy when I'm driving around town and everybody knows my truck, and I go to the schools and kids are, hey, there's Team Snack, they're high-fiving me, and you see these shirts everywhere, and it's, I mean, you know a lot about Northeast Kansas, Aaron, and it's a wonderful place.
Good people.
Mike, I want to ask you real quick, and then we're going to talk about Camp Hope.
And Camp Discovery.
Camp Discovery,
yes.
What's Camp? I guess I heard that yesterday.
Yeah, there's a camp. There's a camp nearby that on the Community Foundation Match Day.
You guys have had another child, right? One more?
Correct.
What was the thought process there? Was it scary to think that you might have two kids with diabetes?
Correct. You know, after our first one, you know, everyone has goals when they get married, and, hey, I want to have this many kids. And, you know, our goal is we want to have four kids. We want to have kind of a big family. And, you know, 18 months later, we get diagnosed. We put a lot of things on hold. We were like, let's try to get this one lined out. And so a little less than five years later, we had our second child, and that is our biggest fear to this day. I mean, she'll be three actually this weekend, which is wild to say, but and knock on wood, she's healthy. She's tough. She's the go-getter of the family, so she challenges us in other ways. But our endocrine doctor to this day, you know, they don't check her necessarily, but they recommend us to get her tested every once in a while, blood sugar and this little.
So she's
like
not
that.
Out of the woods yet.
So
but
she's not
looking good.
Correct. Yeah. You know, we've made it past the threshold of 18 months, but you know, we've met many of kids that are 7, 8, 10, you know, and so on. So she's got a long way before she kind of gets out of that initial stage. But so far, so good.
So Kaylin going to get a go to Camp Discovery this year?
Yeah, she's excited. You know, mom and dad are probably more nervous than she is. She's never been away for, I believe it's 5 nights down in Wichita, and she's going to have an opportunity to go be with, I don't even know how many hundreds of other kids that are diabetic, with campers and with counselors that are all diabetic and doctors. And
you won't have to train them to administer insulin.
No, there'll be zero training. It's drop her off, and mom and dad might have a good weekend, or week. But we're going to be a nervous wreck because we've never been away from her that long. But, yeah, she's excited. It's going to be a great opportunity, great experience, I think, for her to see others that are, you know, like her, I guess, with lack of a better term.
My daughter would have asked for a cell phone so she could FaceTime me each 5 nights. Has she done that yet?
Well, she does have a phone. I'm embarrassed to say that, but it's diabetic related.
Yeah.
She won't be able to do that. There's no contact with the parents for that week unless it's an emergency, they don't realize that now, but they're going to have a chance to at least sleep through the night one time.
Sure.
Does your job, Kent, become
maybe the third night
counseling the parents when their kids are gone?
My job is to raise the money for the scholarships. The people there take such good care of these kids. I mean, Natalie and I started the Team Snack Fund, you know, what, 7 years ago now? 6, 7 years ago. And this will be our fourth year because the last 2 years were canceled of sending these kids. And so it's close to 100 kids that get to go. So when you go to this camp, this year it's down by Wichita. It used to be up by Junction City, but they had to move it. And there's 100 kids from Kansas, and most of our scholarships are for Emporia kids and kids in Northeast Kansas, but some in Western Kansas. And then they have approximately, for every two kids, there's one counselor. And almost all the counselors are people that live with type 1 diabetes that have gone through the camp and loved it so much, and it meant so much to them that they come back. And there's doctors and nurses from Westleaf and Wichita there. And most of the kids that we've sent, they come out of this thing and they're just so much more independent. I mean, during lunch, because Natalie and I get a chance to go spend a day there basically, and during lunch everybody gets up and shows them where they give their shots or where their pumps are, and they share ideas, and she'll be staying in the same cabin with other girls her age, and so she'll make lifelong friends. And there's two or three other kids from Emporia and a young man from Osage City this year that get to go, and I think everybody's very excited. They did have a COVID vaccine mandate, which kind of cut a few kids out that decided not to get the vaccine, but we filled all the scholarships, and it's going to be a great week. We can't wait to go back down there.
So you say 100 kids go. Is there more than one session, or is there?
There is one in Kansas City also where there's 200 kids get to go to that camp because it's bigger, but they try to purposely keep this one pretty smaller and manageable, so the parents feel pretty comfortable with the kids going there, and they can take care of the kids really good, and it seems to tie together very well. There's so many of the people we've met there over the years that continue to go back as counselors, and they're just great people. It's hard to describe.
Well, and the kid probably grows so much more during the time frame, because if you weren't involved with Team Schnack, she might be the only person with type 1 that she knows herself.
Correct. I agree
with that. Until she comes to this, and now she's quote-unquote normalized because everyone there is dealing with the same thing. It's got to be just a great experience for the kids.
Correct.
Are there other kids in Emporia that she knows?
There is one other family. They have a daughter. I believe she's probably 2 or right around 2 that we've actually got to meet with through Kent, that my wife and I have worked with her parents. But as far as Kaylin's age, we've not met any other little kid that's, you know, been – closely tied. There's a couple that are a couple years older, but none that are 6-7.
So no support group?
Yeah, there's support groups out there. You know, and there's kids outside of the Emporia area that we've met that do have kids that are her age that we kind of bounce ideas off of and things like that. But in Emporia itself, the support group is just, you know, people that we met through Kent or people that we kind of mutually know.
Well, that's a good thing that there's not enough people to have a support group.
Yeah, correct.
If you had a dozen of them, that would make the problem even more serious.
Well, and part of it's too, Emporia is so big and there's so many schools that, you know, you don't connect as much as you do in a small town. But we're very thankful for everybody that supports Team Schnack, and the money that we've raised, it does a lot of good, and we want to continue to do this. And a big part of it's been KVOE and what you guys have done for us over the years, and it's meant a lot.
So what's your schedule look like?
Well, I have 3 more awareness assemblies in Northeast Kansas in the next 3 weeks. And the first Saturday of May, we're doing a diabetic walk for Northeast Kansas. So there's some stuff going on. And then I guess we got the camp, and then I signed up for 5 national bike rides. And so we'll just see how it all develops. Every day in this world is a new day right now.
JDRF's main fundraisers are the bike rides.
They have walks too. There's a walk in Kansas City. There'll be a walk in Wichita, and we don't get as involved in the walks as we used to, but we definitely want to try to stay involved with the rides. If you know, if we can complete all the rides that we've signed up for, that'll be 40 of them, and that's a goal that I set. And so we'll see what happens.
So if people want to contact you and get on the bandwagon to help, how do they do that?
If anybody wants to donate money, they can just go through the Emporia Community Foundation. You can do that online, or of course we were happy that we were chosen, you know, last year to be a match day, and we raised a lot of money, and so we try to continue to build that fund. And people want T-shirts or whatever, just I'm easy to find. I just look for my truck.
And you raffle off a golf cart every year?
We have done that, except the last 2 years we haven't been able to do that because, again, we can't get a golf cart. I mean, you know, we ordered them and they just don't come in. But we try to find new ways to fundraise. We try to work with businesses here in town. We love to hand out the T-shirts because people wear them and they make a big difference. And I tell these kids every time they wear their T-shirt, they may be saving somebody else's life.
Mike, you talked about your players, a lot of empathy from them, I guess.
Correct. I mean, that's I'll go back. The first year I diagnosed, you know, one of the big things we did during that fall season was, you know, I had them do a video, or I didn't have them, but they wanted to be a part of a video, and we did a symptoms awareness and you know, and tried to spread it as much as we can. And to this day, I mean, they understand. I might be in the middle of practice, my phone goes off, they know what's going on. It's not me, you know, texting, you know, trying to get dinner lined out. It's me trying to, you know, make sure she's doing okay, my daughter. And so, you know, I've had a lot of support. I mean, I give credit, a lot of credit to Coach Higgins. He completely gets it, and being a father himself, and I was a young father at the time and didn't know what I was doing. And ever since then, he's been highly, highly supportive, and so has, you know, my players. So I can't thank them enough. They know my time gets split up every once in a while, but you know, they're 100% there for me and for her mainly. So,
does Kim work?
Kim, she does work. She works at ESP Financial here in town. So she's been there 15 years, I believe. She just passed here in November. So she does really well. So we're lucky to have really two organizations that take care of us and allow her to do what she needs to do to help, you know, our daughter and really allow us to manage together so we're not completely missing work all the time.
Well, you guys do a great job of your new normal. So
appreciate that.
Kind of role models for you, Kent.
Well, I think the real role models are our wives because, you know, we're on the radio a lot. We get a lot of the attention and stuff, but somebody has to be in the background supporting you. And Kim is just is tied in, having to worry about this all the time and have her phone going and stuff too. And Natalie's always there when, you know, to support us. And we're just very lucky to have those two.
Correct. Yeah, I would say this about my wife. She's the organizer of the family. So
yes, I'd say the same thing. So.
She handles everything. I just kind of smile. But no, my wife does an unbelievable job. I appreciate everything she does for my daughter, obviously.
Thanks for coming in and sharing, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's a bad situation, but you guys are making it as good as it can be. And Kent, of course, there's never enough thanks for you and you and Natalie, so thanks a million. Thanks for coming.
Yep. Anytime you have an opening, we'd be happy to come back.
All right. That's out of here, Aaron.
Thanks for listening to the On Air Chat. We've been brought to you by CB Financial. Retire happy. Retire with CB Financial. See Craig Barnwell at 517 East 6th Avenue. And Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction, 342-5001. The Royals game was postponed until May 2nd, so we will not have the Royals on today. So Sean's going to play us some tunes and then the noon block in a regular afternoon. Here on KVUE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, we are live and local.
96.9 FM.